La Crosse, Wisconsin, from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Back in the saddle on this Monday, October 9th, along with Dr. Kristen Lyerly and Selena Heller from Up North News, on this Indigenous Peoples Day, International Beer and Pizza Day, and a day that also pays tribute to a couple of explorers, Leif Erikson and Christopher Columbus. And again, we'll learn more about Indigenous Peoples Day coming up later in this half hour with Arvina Martin, chair of the American Indian Caucus for the State Democratic Party. We'll learn more about the history of the holiday and the opportunities to learn more about our tribal communities whose challenges and their gifts are often invisible to the rest of the country. We'll do that with our friends from Motherhood for Good, Kate Duffy and Danielle Lynn. That's all coming up this hour, along with Terry Bell, Civic Media News Director, with three things you need to know to start the week. But as always, we begin by inviting your phone calls at 844-967-2789, or you can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Up North News being a separate entity from Civic Media, you can find the work that we do at upnorthnewswi.com. A lot of that work done by one Selena Heller, who's hanging out here and has provided me with a list of all the things that you were doing while I was out of state last week. You were a busy little reporter.
Yeah, lots of things. Well, there were a lot of things going on last week, as there always are. But
yeah, we had, for example, there was World Teacher Day. There was and Walk to School Day. The two are somewhat kind of related. And Kristen, you were telling us about one of your boys is a teacher, and you know, loving the new routine of, you know, greeting all the kids every day. And I like that we have these things like Walk to School Day and World Teacher Day, because it's any excuse to once again appreciate the educators in our life who are, you know, far too often demonized in certain political circles. And so I'm glad to see that. And I hope that, you know, the educators that both of you talk to and know so well can feel that appreciation from time to time.
Well, right. It's so nice, and like, to have these days, one day out of the year, or maybe there's a National Teacher Day. I know there are, but so there's a few. Mm-hmm. But they do so much work, and they do reach out to parents like, can you help with these things? Well, of course. And I hope all the parents out there feel inclined to help out on those times that teachers need, because always they're paying so much out of their pockets and to fund their classrooms and things like that. So it's really important to support all these teachers, and they do such a wonderful job in handling all the kids from day to day. And we walked to school, so I saw all the crazy kids running around and to corral them so they didn't run into the streets and everything.
And we get herding cats for a reason. I mean, I'm watching you trying to herd one cat over there, and that's tough enough. And Kristen, now you're the mom of a teacher, so that appreciation has to mean, you know, just as much, if not more, to you.
Oh, yeah. And he wasn't a good student, so it's kind of shocking that he's a teacher.
Wow.
I mean, he was the kind of student who needed a lot of engagement, and he'd be the first to tell you. He needed a lot of engagement. He needed teachers who were patient and who treated him like his individual self, not just like, you know, kid six in a classroom of 25, but the special care and attention that teachers share and that they draw from their own experiences to be able to nurture kids and really help them grow and develop instead of just, you know, a checklist of things that they have to get through. Teachers are really special people, and they're such an important part of the fabric of our community.
So about Walk to School Day, last week over in Idaho, our grandsons are 9 and 14, so they go to, you know, two different schools. And we volunteered to be the school bus that week, because normally my daughter drives them in because she lives just outside of that particular school district. And so it necessitated two rides, one at 7:30 in the morning, one at 8:30 in the morning. So we're taking the 9-year-old in to the elementary school. And of course, there's school buses, you know, that are going in at about the same time. And we're following one, which is fine. But then it stops three blocks from the school and lets all the kids out. All the kids. We thought, was there something going on? Is there, you know, is it like a little fire drill? What is this? And they all get out and they all start going up the sidewalk. And then the school bus goes right alongside them. at about, you know, 2 miles an hour, 3 miles an hour for the three blocks, and backing up all of us who are dropping the kids off. And we're like, what is this? And then we get to the school. We're like, what? And they're like, oh, it's walk to school day. So in the spirit of walk to school, the school buses are dropping the kids off like three blocks out. Like, what?
Yes, that's what we did too.
Oh, did you really?
Well, yeah. So we drive to school in the morning, but mm-hmm. so there's always like points for walk to school day, like meeting points. So a teacher goes to one spot in a neighborhood and then walks with a group and you meet at a point, or if you want to meet. And so we met at a point, we drove there in the car, and then the bus came there and dropped the kids off, and then everybody walked. So that's how we walked to school, because it would have been taking us a little while to walk from our house.
Well, look, if it helps people appreciate, you know, all the kid pedestrians that are out there and help them drive a little safer, then I suppose that's okay. I was putting up some old photos for my mom's birthday over the weekend, and one of them is of, you know, 11-year-old Pat Kreitlow waiting with his mom to go to a summer safety camp to be a captain of our school safety patrol.
Of course you were the captain.
Of course I was. But there's also a radio lesson that I learned in being the captain that I'll tell folks about on the other side of this break, where we will get the full updated forecast from Weatherology, a quick check on sports, and more with Kristen Lyerly and Selena Heller coming up right after this on this Monday. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be right back. Well, I made the mistake of mentioning that I'd been captain of my school safety patrol back in the day. And Kristen, of course, responds with some kind of a captain joke. And next thing you know, we're listening to the captain and Tennille. Are you?
Yes, we are.
You're my Tennilles? Is that how this is working?
I'd be your Tennille anytime.
You're just wrong. Just wrong. So anyway, we've got more stories about that. We'll pick up where we left off in just a bit. But first, we've got to get to the weather, which, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I missed all of the 90s last week, being up in the mountains near Yellowstone National Park, where we had cloudy skies, rain, 40s and 50s all week. So this, to me, is just a continuation of what was going on, getting us into fall. And Jennifer Wojcicki is here from Weatherology to tell us more about how the forecast is shaping up for this week across Wisconsin. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, well, it's an interesting week here this week. A chilly start to the week here for today with a frost advisory in effect this morning for the entire state. A below-average day as a cold front pushed through and is currently off to the south, blocking any heat we normally would be getting at this point of the year. Sunny skies for most today, a little bit more cloud cover around Wausau. Mid to upper 50s for Richland Center and the southern half of the state, then upper 40s to the low 50s from Oshkosh through central Wisconsin and over towards Amory and Baldwin. Tuesday looks like a little bit more cloud cover coming in for most, still sunny from Madison through Richland Center and up towards Baldwin. Temperature-wise, similar to today. Wednesday, sunny for most. Some frost potentially in the morning again, mid-50s to around 60s for most. It'll actually be the warmest day for this particular forecast. Chance for showers for the second half of the work week for all, mid to upper 50s Thursday. Similar temperatures for the southern half of the state for Friday. Cooler for Oshkosh and everyone northward as that cold front begins to push through with highs in the upper 40s to low 50s.
All right. Nice way to start the week here, Jennifer. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
And you get our Weatherology forecast throughout the day here across the Civic Media Radio Network, where things are, a good 25 degrees cooler than they were before I left on vacation. Fall has definitely arrived. The Packers are playing tonight in Las Vegas against the Raiders. So we all have our proper green and gold, or in Selena's case, green. Close enough, Selena.
Camo.
Yeah, camo. Camo works. Yep. And
as I
set up my notes a week ago for my return, I noted was, you know, Brewers preview or review. Well, I guess we're going to review because there's nothing to preview, but I still think it was a good season on the whole.
I love what you said earlier. It's about appreciating what they actually did and not like throwing it all into that playoff basket. They had a great season. We had days and days of enjoyment. It was a lot of fun, and we can look forward to next season.
Yeah. And look, it's not like you don't want, you know, the Brewers to go all the way, or the Packers or the Bucks, you know, in the new season here. We'd love all that. But, you know, if the alternative is that your team is a cellar dweller, you know, that's no thank you. I'll take this any time you want. We were talking before the break, and I promised a story about being captain of the police safety patrol for the, you know, crossing guards and everything else. And to tell the story of how I got fired from part of that role, I was doing the administrative stuff just fine. But one of the jobs was supposed to be announcing the buses, because everybody stayed in their classrooms until your bus came up. And so I guess they thought I was going to be a broadcaster someday. So they trusted me with the microphone.
Oh boy.
But I had not yet learned projection. And so now I know when you're up to a microphone, you speak into the microphone in a normal tone of voice. But at the time, I thought I was like talking to the whole school. So I'd be like, bus 175 is here. And I'd be like, Pat, not so loud. And they'd turn the volume down, but I'd still get up against the mic and announce bus 142. And eventually they determined that somebody else understood how projection works with a microphone. And so, but I mean, it made me a better public speaker later on. It has served me well, but I had to learn the hard way some of those lessons about how to use your voice when you've got a microphone there in front of you. And Selena, you know, how many reporters have we seen come through TV 13 over the years, you know, and that microphone is everywhere. It's too far. It's too close.
Just waving with your hands.
Oh God, the waving with the hands, the microphone. That one always kills me. Oh, they get it wrong when they're asking, if they're using one microphone that they're holding, and you're supposed to hold it to you when you're asking the question, but they're holding it to the other person's face. You're asking the question over here. It's not always as easy as it looks, folks. It's just not, you know. Although
all of us weren't born with a mic in our hands.
No.
I started out reading announcements at school on the microphone in the mornings. Mm-hmm. So,
and you did not get fired because you understood all this very early on, didn't you?
I think I made side comments, so I think they didn't like that.
I've definitely been known to do that as well. All right. So we were talking about some of the stories that Selena Heller's been working on for Up North News. And last week was Banned Books Week, right?
Correct.
So there were stories, I'm sure, in several different outlets, no shortage of them for Up North News as well. You had everything from recommendations from bookstore owners to the public library perspective. And I think just, again, helping people appreciate the value of being able to make your own choices on books and not letting somebody else impose their, you know, dictate their preferences on you when it comes to books.
Right. And that's what the week was all about. And you wouldn't think some of the books that are banned or challenged is another word that they use, necessarily banned. They are The Catcher in the Rye. There's such a big list that you would be surprised. So I walked into the Altoona Public Library here and kind of looked at their display, and you would and they have why it's banned on the covers, and it's for a certain word or a certain sentence, and then they just have to take the whole thing out of circulation in certain places. But public libraries want to be that resource where you can go and still be able to read those books. And the bookstore owners across the state, I talked to a few of them, and they gave their recommendations and why. So you'll be able to see that too. And they really wanted to promote reading all types of books, even though people might say, you know, I want these books banned. But a lot of these librarians and bookstore owners say, you know, they haven't even read these books. So take that into consideration while you choose your books.
And Kristen, there's such a real life component to this, is that a lot of these books that some people find either distasteful or they label it obscene or whatnot, is helping people come to grips with who they are, what their identity is. And I mean, how many times people have come into doctor's offices and they either don't understand certain things about, you know, how their body works or gender, sexuality, and doctors have to answer some of these questions because they did not have access to materials that could have helped them understand things earlier on.
Yeah, it's very true. And, you know, Catcher in the Rye, I don't know if you've actually read that book, but I remember reading it in high school and then reading it again in college and then reading it again as an adult. And I saw it from such different perspectives. And every time it's just so beautifully written. And every time I learned something from it. So I think it's so important that I feel like as a parent, my job is not to restrict what my kids see and to put blinders on them, but to present them with the world and all of the ugliness that's here and make sure that they have bumpers and support so that they can make their way through the world. And that's what banned books are. These books have messages that we need to know about, we need to understand, and we need to have conversations about these difficult topics so that we can be better and stronger together.
Yeah, I just don't know what it is that makes people think that someone else is willingly putting something in a library that would be harmful just because you don't agree with it, or maybe, you know, it's not up to your taste and sensibilities. There is, for these libraries, for these bookstore owners, for publishers, there is a component of, you know, helping inform people about the world around them and trying to do a service. And, you know, it just seems wrong that the response is the disservice of trying to undermine the decisions that they're making on behalf of others. So those are some great points that you'll see in Selena's stories. Selena, you've also got a note here about working on a special Festers carnival for Oktoberfest in La Crosse. What was that about?
Excuse me. Yes, when they had the Oktoberfest in La Crosse, they do a very neat thing where they have a day for everyone, that anybody with special needs and abilities can come, and they have a carnival there. And it's time for all of these kids and adults to come and enjoy this maybe a little quieter time at the carnival. And a group from the Melrose Mindoro School District came, a group of kids, and in many cases, it was their first time that they were able to go on carnival rides. So they had a really fun time that day. And there are photos, so you'll be able to see the smiles on their faces. And they had such fun at this special Festers carnival as part of the La Crosse Oktoberfest.
It calls to mind, again, some of the progress that we have made. And as much as sometimes the world just seems downright depressing at times, we have to be reminded of the advances that it once upon a time, and not that terribly long ago, people with special needs were simply institutionalized. You know, they were shunned or they were abused. And Kristen, it was one of your hometown health segments that, you know, taught us about appreciating people, whether it's, you know, Down syndrome or whatever the case, that, you know, we operate better when we're kinder to all kinds of people and, you know, not simply ignoring or abusing people that, you know, seem to have different, you know, skill sets or capacities than the rest of us.
Yes. You know, a movie that really opened my eyes is a documentary that was done a few years ago called Crip Camp. And it's the story of how the American Disabilities Act came to be. And this group of people with a variety of different disabilities who would go to summer camp together became activists and did these sit-ins and said, you know, we are people too, and we need to be able to get to places. And it really has changed not only how people with different types of disabilities live their lives, but how we all live our lives, how now we have curb cuts on the corners and people with strollers use them and people who are on bikes use them. It's not just for people in wheelchairs. So all of these different examples of how we're changing society to make it better for the whole instead of just for the able-bodied folks out there. So much more that we can do, Pat and Selena, you know.
Oh, we do. Absolutely. As I look ahead to something, something I saw in the Washington Post last week, and Kristen, I don't have enough time to ask you about it today, but I think it's something I want to look into, and maybe Selena does as well from a Wisconsin standpoint. But the Washington Post did a very special report last week called Dying Early, America's Life Expectancy Crisis. an epidemic of chronic illness is killing us too soon. And, you know, Kristen, we've touched on it briefly, but life expectancy is falling in this country right now because of chronic illness. And far too often, as much as people hate when we always go for a political component, there's oftentimes a political reason for it, like failing to, you know, allow our healthcare system to keep up with the needs of a population out there. So it's something I'm sure we're going to be talking about in the future as well.
We have the most expensive healthcare in amongst peer countries in the world, and we have the worst outcomes. Yeah. And politics is a giant component of that.
Yeah. So it's something that we'll follow as well. We've got Kristen back here on Thursday for Hometown Health. Are you doing public service announcement as well on As Goes Wisconsin this week?
Yeah, we are. So much to talk about.
Okay, there you go. Thanks, Kristen, and safe travels back home. And Selena, thank you so much, too. Enjoy the rest of your holiday, and you know, we'll be back at it tomorrow.
All right.
We'll be learning more about the holiday, Indigenous Peoples Day, coming up in our next segment. You're up north. It's Motherhood Monday. That means we bring in our friends from Motherhood for Good, Danielle Scampini-Lynn and Kate Duffy. Ladies, how are you this morning?
Doing fine. How are you, Pat?
Doing great, thank you. Missed you guys during the time off, but nice to get reconnected again on this holiday, this Indigenous Peoples Day. And we'll catch up another time with Arvina Martin, but we wanted to focus first on that because, again, there's so much that we teach our kids in so many subtle ways. And, you know, history is always evolving. And I'd like to think that the right word there is evolving. We learned a lot about Christopher Columbus when we were kids. But as we've learned more and more, and we've learned about the real world impacts, you know, that came with colonizing, you know, this country, while it led to this country, and there's pros and cons about that, of course, the fact of the matter is there was this tremendous impact on the Indigenous tribal communities that were here already, and that we were long past due for a holiday to recognize that, and that that's something that's important to teach to our kids as well, Danielle. You know, just tell us a bit more about where you see the value in creating this relatively new holiday of Indigenous Peoples Day.
Right. I mean, relatively new is definitely the key there. I believe the first presidential proclamation was in 2021, which mm-hmm. is 2 years ago. So, you know, I used to work in Chicago. I used to work in Chicago, and there was a Columbus Day parade every, you know, Columbus Day. No, you need to go ask Dad, honey. I just need you to wait a second, honey.
It's called Motherhood Monday for
it's
a reason.
It's true. It's Motherhood Monday. Yeah. Do you want to come say hi, Eliza? No.
Okay.
So, you know, definitely something that I will be fully mm-hmm. clear that I do not know nearly enough about the history of everything that happened to the Indigenous populations, Indigenous communities. And I've learned a little bit from some friends who just started working with the Potawatomi Foundation. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we definitely need to be focusing more on this. So yeah. I would definitely encourage everyone to check out the Forest County Potawatomi Museum. My friend was just telling me about it, and I know we're going to be taking a trip up there sometime soon because, I don't want to pretend like I'm an expert because I absolutely am not, but it's something that we really need to focus on and know more about.
And it's something, Kate, where again, we spend a lot of time focusing on appreciation for the professional educators who work with our kids, mm-hmm. but we are the educators as well, not in place of, but as well. And that, you know, it's wherever we can, you know, work to make sure we're working with some of the best, most recent, perhaps most compassionate information that we're passing on to our kids.
Absolutely. I think that's such a great point with all of this work in general. Of course, we want, you know, them to be learning good things in school. We want good legislation and things like that. But another big thing we can do as parents is to like bring that education into our homes, you know, seek out books that talk about those kind of things and like have those conversations with our kids. And I think here in Wisconsin, especially, we have a really proud and rich Indigenous history and community. And, you know, I know that they're very embedded in the beautiful natural resources we have in our state. And there's so much, like Danielle said, there's so much that that I need to learn, and actually getting more involved in kind of progressive politics in the state has already been kind of eye-opening for me, and allowed me to see more of this population and these communities and how, like, how much they contribute to society and how wonderful they are. So it's been nice to learn more about them. Yeah, just like you guys said, I mean, this is a relatively new holiday, and it's very needed. And as we're like, you know, we learned about Christopher Columbus and how great he was, you know, growing up. And, you know, it's only in recent years that we're kind of seeing the other side of things. So really embracing that with our kids and helping to learn them too. I actually was at a soccer game for my stepson yesterday, and we were on the sidelines, and my stepdaughter was there, who's 14. And somebody was talking about, like, oh, they might not have school tomorrow or something. And her and another adult at the same time were like, the adult said, oh yeah, it's Columbus Day. And my stepdaughter said, yeah, it's Indigenous Peoples Day. And that was just kind of like cool to see in real time, the juxtaposition of like a young adult already, like, in her mind, that's what it was. So
that is really cool. I love that.
It is. And it gives us an opportunity again to note that, and people saying, oh, it's cancel culture, you're canceling Christopher Columbus. No, that's not the point of this at all. And by the way, a lot of folks over the decades turned Columbus Day into a celebration of Italian heritage and leaders, explorers, discoverers. And that is not, again, not to take anything away from that. It is simply to be more honest and more expansive with the record of Christopher Columbus himself, and again, its impact on people who were here first. And so among the activities that people, you know, recommend on a day like this is to get a feel for whose land you are on in terms of, you know, the indigenous people that were here before, you know, European settlers and colonizers came in. One of the first, I won't say viral, but one of the first really popular graphics that we produced at Up North News was a map of Wisconsin that showed, you know, the various tribal lands. Well, they weren't tribal at the time. They were the indigenous lands, so that people understood that, you know, this was land that belonged to the Ojibwa, or, you know, to the Potawatomi, or to the Ho-Chunk. And, you know, just starting with that recognition that history didn't begin with us, you know, it didn't begin with our great grandfathers and grandmothers, who may have been wonderful people, but history didn't start with them. And that's, I think, that's not a bad thing at all to teach to our kids, Danielle.
Totally. And one other thing that I think we need to recognize is the lack of indigenous representation in our government. You know, I think that is something that we could really focus on. Is, I think Deb Hadid is the first cabinet secretary of mm-hmm. indigenous descent, which is just wild to think about. And, you know, they were here first, and they bring so much to our country that they definitely need to have more of a say. So I think that's something that we also need to focus on, is maybe do some research. I mean, myself included, research on indigenous representatives in our state and federal governments, and how we can try to work on getting more representation.
Yeah, it's again, mindful of, look, it's still Columbus Day as a federal holiday for the purposes of, there won't be mail delivery today. We're going to, you know, have this, you know, bifurcated, and again, I would argue more expansive view of the day, in much the same way that Juneteenth is mm-hmm. helping people appreciate that we don't just talk about the Civil War in terms of, you know, Union troops versus Confederate troops, but that, you know, that slavery was a very real issue about this. And unfortunately, as you guys are just, you know, learning at Motherhood for Good, there's still plenty of school boards out there, school districts and other community members that don't want to teach that fully expansive, more fully honest view of history when it comes to enslavement and race relations and everything like that. Kate, I know you and I have talked, you know, like, even now, the work should be getting done to find people to run for school board next year, because you know that people who would be more restrictive of what we teach our students, they're certainly organizing right now to run for school boards next year.
Absolutely. There's so much going on with school boards all over the country, and especially here in Wisconsin too, that Like you said, yes, there's either people like that that are running for these seats, and a lot of them actually are running uncontested. So, mm-hmm. you know, just because not enough people are paying attention, people are busy, they don't think that it matters as much, but it matters greatly, and actually has a really large impact on your immediate family and immediate life and community. That school board is really important. And there's, yes, I mean, we all, I think, come from the camp that, like, it's important to look back at the real history and learn the real situation and things that happened and be able to learn from it and grow and move forward. I mean, you have to, like, really know what went on to be able to reckon with it and change things and progress and move society forward. We can't just look back at everybody in history. I mean, this was like hundreds of years ago, right? Like, of course they didn't do everything the way we would have done it now. And maybe, you know, that, okay, now I have like a child coming in.
I feel so left out. Now I want all my kids or grandkids like, to come in here.
And that's okay, you know. And but there are people out there who get very defensive over anybody trying to change history when it's not changing history, right? Mm-hmm. This is how it happened. It's just learning the real history. And by the way, the curriculum teaches it in a way that's very age appropriate for children. You know what I mean? You know, no, but when they're talking about kindergartners or first graders, you know, it's at a very, very high level that nothing is going to upset them or anything like that. So people who are putting together this curriculum and teaching it are very mindful of that fact. And yes, school boards, you know, are something we're going to be talking about a lot coming up. And we've talked to Luann Bird about this too, and maybe doing like some Zoom training sessions, even some one-on-one sessions, because if you haven't been involved in school boards before, and I hadn't really started getting familiar until, you know, a year or two ago, there's a lot to learn, you know, and there's, especially in some communities, a lot of them have these like communities who have been here for a long time. So sometimes you'll find like some of the school boards have, they went to school here, they all know each other and stuff. So it's like a little harder to break into. It's certainly harder to find information. It's not like, like with a Congress race or anything, just going onto their website and finding their policy positions, because a lot of them are nonpartisan, quote unquote, for the audio listeners. Right. So, yeah, we're going to be talking a lot more about that and hoping that we can convince some people to run too, and knowing that there's support out there, both in terms of training, mentoring, and financial support. People want good people to run for these school boards and represent teaching real history and accepting all kids and making safe spaces for these children in our schools. So we're going to be talking about a lot more about that coming up. There's so much to do, and we really rely and count on different people in our community kind of providing us information too, because there's just, there's so many different districts, obviously, and so many different things going on in all the different districts. So a lot to kind of keep an eye on.
A great way to learn about these issues is to go over to the Motherhood for Good Instagram page. Just go to Instagram and look up Motherhood for Good. And, you know, changing gears to come to an issue we've talked about in the past, and I've mentioned once this morning already, while I was away, a man with a handgun, loaded handgun, shows up in the Capitol at the governor's office. He's taken into custody. He posts bail. He comes back that evening with a loaded assault rifle. We have talked before, Danielle, about the need for red flag laws in this state, and that, again, this is a classic case of why you need red flag laws, why you need to take gun safety seriously, and why you as a group and as parents need to continue putting pressure on legislators to take this seriously.
Yes. I mean, first of all, we're so, so thankful that nothing horrific happened from that incident. Very grateful that the governor and everyone is safe. But yeah, I mean, people like to point out like, oh, well, you know, if this is why we have cash bail. And it's like, well, that's not why we have cash bail. And clearly someone who posted bail was able to go out and like come back and try something even worse. But yeah, it's why was that person able to go and either, I'm not sure if they went out and purchased the assault rifle, if they already had it, but it's just, we don't need to get into the semantics of it. Just the idea that if you're saying that like, oh, guns aren't the problem, it's like, okay, well, we're also not solving whatever the problem is. And so if we can try to just put some common sense legislation out there that we can all agree on. I mean, I don't think we could find anyone who thought that that person should have been able to return to the scene with a more dangerous weapon.
And he was in there.
We all agree on that.
Without a shirt on. Yeah. He actually told the officers he had lots of other firearms at home and knew how to use them, but they had no legal course to hold him or take his firearms away, which is just...
Until it's too late. And it's like, why is that more important than keeping the people that are actually
and law enforcement? I mean, it's putting law enforcement right in the line of fire too.
And let's not forget, as we also mentioned in our last hour, it would have been legal had he brought a concealed weapon into the Capitol if he'd had a concealed carry permit.
Worn a shirt and put it underneath the shirt.
Yeah, again, in the continuing insanity that is not taking gun safety seriously. This and many other issues we continue to follow with Kate and Danielle from Motherhood for Good. Thank you so much. Hope you guys have a great week.
Thanks,
Pat.
All right. Yep. Have a great day. When we come back, we'll talk to Terry Bell, Civic Media News Director, with three things you should know to start the week. One more look at unpacking the news before we call it a day for this Monday, October 9th on Up North News Radio. We'll be back. Civic Media News Director Terry Bell joins us now from the studios in Madison with three things you should know to get the week rolling. Terry, how are you?
I'm great, Pat. How are you?
Good. Still kind of catching up after a week-long road trip,
sure.
Trying to figure out who's been doing what. I know the Brewers are out. I know the Packers play tonight. I haven't followed some of the other sports at all. I mean, when last I left, UW volleyball was still ranked number one and undefeated.
And they still are. They won. They swept another game this weekend, Saturday night. So they've won 21 straight matches. They swept.
Wow.
So it's they've been on quite a roll. So I don't think they've lost a set since the Florida match.
Wow.
And that was, So they are definitely hitting their stride. That's for sure. And, you know, it's just the Big Ten season never gets any easier. So we'll see what happens in the weeks to come, but I think they're putting themselves in a great position.
That's it sounds like it. Okay. Yeah. Did I hear you say you were at a UW women's hockey game as well?
I had never been to a Badger women's hockey game, which is, you know, one of the most spectacularly successful teams in all of Wisconsin. And I've lived here 24 years or so, and that was the first time I had made it to LeBron Arena for a women's hockey game. What a display that was. 12-2. They beat Boston College on the night that they raised the banner for the 2023 national championship. So, and I tell you, I have to credit that game night staff, because you would think, you know, when your team is up 10 goals, I mean, this is unusual hockey, that the atmosphere in the room would just be flat. But no, the crowd was boisterous. The whole the energy was great. I really credit that game night staff for doing such a great job of keeping the whole thing fun from beginning to end, even in a blowout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. And so now turning to our daily duties here, and that's keeping people informed on the news. Mm-hmm. And while we certainly have Wisconsin stories and national stories to follow, we obviously are also following events in Israel, the attacks by Hamas militants. And so I'm sure that's one of the things that you're watching throughout our news updates on the day.
Oh, absolutely. The whole world has just been aghast at what's been going on in Israel. Saturday, it started with surprise attacks by Hamas. Israel retaliating, and a lot of people, a lot of Israelis kidnapped by Hamas. And also, Israel is cutting off infrastructure, electricity, water to the Gaza area. So it sounds like the people who are really keeping a close eye on this are saying that this may be a long and protracted stretch of violence, probably the worst in 50 years, in a part of the world known for its violent situations.
Yes. So we'll watch that. We watch it looking at the need for stable American leadership, and yet we can't have that because the United States House of Representatives is paralyzed right now with no speaker. And so instead of facing these big issues, Terry, you're following essentially, you know, what I consider, it's almost like student council elections, where they're listening to a couple of people about who will be either more to the right or more moderate, whatever the case may be, you're going to be watching how Wisconsin's House Republicans weigh in on this battle to be the next Speaker of the House.
Right. And two Wisconsin Republicans have weighed in. Tom Tiffany and Scott Fitzgerald both say they support Jim Jeffers.
Jordan.
And Steve Scalise being the other candidate. And yeah, the most of this week will be spent the Republicans debating among themselves what direction they want to go in. There may not be a repeat of last spring's, you know, 15 vote floor vote.
Might not.
Well, what might happen, as I understand, is there will be secret paper ballots behind closed doors until they get to 217 and then take it out onto the floor.
Oh, okay.
So I think Republicans want to avoid the spectacle that was the Kevin McCarthy vote. But it seems like no matter what, I mean, whoever wins has to get all Republican votes. Not one Democrat is going to cross over to vote for either of these guys or anyone who's likely to emerge. So Republicans have to agree among themselves first.
That's right. And again, it's a matter of the degree to which either the farthest right members are the tail wagging the dog, or if the rest of the House Republican Conference essentially brings them to heel, to continue the metaphor. And we just won't know for a couple of days here. So getting closer to home, we've mentioned previously, and I'm sure we're going to hear more throughout the week, about the state Supreme Court, now under progressive control, taking up the gerrymandered maps case directly, and that includes with newly elected progressive justice Janet Protasiewicz.
Right. So on Friday, the court said they would take up one of the two maps cases. They're not going to consider the other one, but one is all it takes to set this next series of events into motion. Janet Protasiewicz says that she will hear the case. So now Republicans will see if they will make good on their threats to impeach the new justice, an idea that seems to be unpopular with the public, but an idea that Republicans are running out of options in terms of holding on to the maps they drew. It would not appear as though they would survive this liberal court. So Robin Voss, as you might remember, a few weeks ago proposed this Iowa-style redistricting system, and that doesn't appear likely to get very far either.
No, and so you will continue to have Republicans who are talking about whether to impeach Justice Protasiewicz, even as others are talking about impeaching Megan Wolf, the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And I hasten to add again, the nationally highly regarded administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And yet, even after the state Senate took essentially a fake vote to fire her because there were no legal grounds, you now have at least one Senate leader encouraging the assembly to impeach Megan Wolf, and Robin Voss saying, I got a lot going on right now. I may not get to that.
No, I think he's probably smart to stay away from this for now. And but who knows? There is a lawsuit pending. Attorney General Josh Call is suing, saying that the Senate had no grounds to make this. So we'll see what the judge says. And if the judge agrees with the attorney general, then, you know, talk of impeachment may start up again. In fact, mm-hmm. I would expect it to.
Yeah, because again, these political battles get a lot of attention, but they sure take away time that could be spent on issues like the child care crisis and everything else that's going on there. But these are the things that Terry Bell and the news team are watching at the Capitol. Terry, thank you so much. Good to talk to you again.
Thank
Have a great
you,
start to the week.
Always good.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us here. Coming up next, depending on your civic media radio station, we have Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Green Bay, and Racine. We've got Stu Daniels in the Chippewa Valley, La Crosse, Hayward, and Oshkosh. We've got Chad Holmes coming up on Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, Stephanie Miller in Madison, James Jay and the gang in Wisconsin Rapids, and they are all followed by As Goes Wisconsin, and then the new news, and Town Call at 12:15, and Todd Alba from 1 to 3. And that's just getting the day going here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can follow me on social media, Pat Kreitlow up north on Facebook, Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. Have a great Monday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.